Hey, serious privacy enthusiasts. Ready to ace your AI data privacy game?
Oh, you bet, Kay. Dive into the world of TrustArc's Nemity Research, your go-to for staying on top of regulatory developments in AI and privacy.
Seriously, Nemity Research maintains a massive privacy and regulatory database featuring expert guidance and analysis from legal and privacy pros.
So save time on privacy research, cut your compliance timeline, and reduce costs with Nemity Research.
Get your regulatory research and insights at your fingertips with a free trial.
So get ahead in privacy compliance and start that free trial today. Go to trustarc.com/nimity-free-trial.
You're listening to Serious Privacy by TrustArc. Please welcome our hosts, Paul Breitbarth and Kay Royal.
There we are, the end of another crazy year. Just like 2020, 2021 might be a year that many of us actually would like to forget because of all things COVID. At the same time, for the data protection community, it was an exciting year, and a lot of good things have happened, and a lot of crazy things have happened too. We have new laws, new guidance, more enforcement and court decisions, and a continuously expanding field of privacy professionals. And here at Serious Privacy, we also look back at an exciting year because the podcast continued to grow. This is episode 91 that we record, and we have well over 50,000 downloads to date. Thank you for that. And of course, we received wide recognition, including from the master of the privacy podcast directory, Jeff Jockish. A few weeks ago, you already heard predictions from lots of IPP Brussels visitors for 2022, and today you'll hear ours. And we look back at some of the most popular episodes of 2021, including the favorite episodes of Kay and myself. So for the last time this year, my name is Paul Breitbarth.
And I'm Kay Royal, and welcome to Serious Privacy. So I'm going to keep our unexpected question short today, because I know what my answer is. Did you exercise today?
Yes.
Ooh, mine's absolutely no. But what'd you do?
I walked with Higgins.
Nice. You had to think about that. I heard you pause.
Yeah, I wanted to think whether this qualifies as exercise, but it was a pretty big walk in the park where he likes to run. So yeah, I think that counts as exercise.
That counts as exercise. I would absolutely, but not today. Today, I have sat my butt in the chair. But let's be fair. I was going to say it's early in the morning for me, but no, it's not. It's like 11 or so. So still, never mind. I could have exercised.
There's still time. The day is not over.
There's still time. Exactly. There we go. I'll try to make it. Although at work right now, it's interesting that they're doing an exercise competition. And she's arbitrarily throwing in replacements for exercise that rather than doing 10,000 steps, that if you do 14 or 15 squats, it counts as 500 steps. If you list down three things you're thankful for, it counts as 500 steps.
If you share a recipe, it's 500 steps.
Right. I'm like, okay, I might actually get to 10,000 steps today. I can write down a whole bunch of things I'm thankful for, one of them being you. So
likewise.
All right. I'm also thankful, actually, for our podcast. We enjoy doing it. All of the hints and the tips on podcasts say, don't do it for others, do it for yourself. And that's what will drive the podcast being successful. But our success is due not only to mine and yours passion, but how you and I work together. Wow, that didn't sound good in two sentences following each other, did it?
But I do get what you are saying, and it's...
Exactly!
It helps to keep us sane over these 2 years.
It does. It does. But we're also successful because of our fans, because we hear a lot from our listeners, a lot that give us questions, they challenge us, they give us ideas. And so I am very thankful of everything that we've built so far, and I know it's going to continue going. But in speaking of being thankful, we have favorite episodes to think about. Let's start.
We do. And one of the top five most popular episodes, and this was not a surprise for me, was our very first episode of this season. Our season opener, Helen Dixon. Obviously, the interview we had with her was listened to a lot.
Fantastic.
I still look back at it very, very positively. I really enjoyed it. And we're going to look for a similar season opener for next year. We've set ourselves a pretty high bar.
You're on the hook.
But I'm sure we'll be able to find a good guest for episode number one. One of the things we talked about with Helen, the conducting of international investigation, but also all the flack that she received for not being fast enough, for not doing her work in the way that others believe she should do it. Let's listen to a clip. Your office has received a lot of criticism in the past year, especially. Where are the decisions? The fines are not high enough. There are not sufficient fines on the international tech companies. The data transfers have not been immediately blocked. How do you deal with all that criticism? Because, I mean, you're also just a human being, and this often is quite personal as well, what I see come by in online social media.
Social media is not...
You said it, Kay. No, it's certainly not forgiving. I suppose, like everyone, we have to be open to constructive criticism and genuine feedback. So we tend to avoid looking at what trolls are saying or what those that are commentating from a position where they really have no knowledge of what they're talking. In terms of the criticism, I think sometimes when we talk about the criticism directed at the Irish DPC, we also forget to mention that we also receive a lot of praise, and that sometimes the criticism is coming from very limited quarters. So, for example, I was thinking about actually in December, some of the coverage of our Twitter decision and the process and the publication of the Article 65. And it was fascinating to see some journalists attempt to spin what had happened as a majority of DPAs opposed the Irish DPC decision. And of course, if you're any good at math, even if you did count 11 objections out of 27, that wouldn't be a majority. And of course, the fact that the Article 65 process found that the majority of the objections did not meet the definition in Article 424 as relevant and reasoned would lead you to actually say a very small minority of data protection authorities objected. So there's undoubtedly a spin put on things which can then get people very riled up.
So yeah, that was Helen Dixon earlier this year, and I don't believe that her position would have changed by now in how she looks at things, even though the criticism has not ended. I must say
exactly
that I'm actually still pretty impressed by all the work that the Irish DPC does get done. And yes, there are all reasons why you cannot agree with their positions, where you cannot agree with interpretations of the GDPR. At the same time, if you look at the amount and the volume of complaints they have to deal with, they do get them done.
They do. And I'm trying to think of which data protection authority it was that came out, I think it was just last week, and said, let's be clear, we may not always agree with the Irish DPC, but we are professionals, they are experienced, the full respect is there between the offices. You should never take a criticism of a decision as the fact that we don't have faith in the commissioner that's in place.
Yeah, that was the Norwegian DPA, actually.
I thought so.
So, yeah.
Very nice.
Also, hearing this clip, I'm glad that we changed recording software throughout the year.
Yes, me too.
You can hear that our sound quality has improved a little over time. And we still have lots to learn when it comes to audio, but using a new platform has certainly already helped us to improve the quality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love it. So, yeah, you're on the hook to find us a fantastic speaker to open up the third season, which, of course, will go live either on or sometime around Data Privacy Day, Data Protection Day, on January 28th.
Absolutely, and we'll find one.
Challenge accepted, huh?
Of course. The next clip that I wanted to play, again, this is actually from my favorite episode of this year. And this is the opposing view, basically, to Helen. This is Romain Robert, who joined us from NOIB. And we know that NOIB and the DPC don't really see eye to eye. NOIB is actually doing something called the Christmas Advent readings now every Sunday. For those of you who are Catholic, they may get the hint. But they try to explain more about the whole background of the case against Facebook that they're having and all the conversations that they have with the Irish DPC and how all of that works. But with Romain, we also spoke a lot about well, first of all, Brussels waffles, but also also about the broader perspective on enforcement.
But the DPAs did not go after the small and medium companies to begin with. And so part of it might be related to that, but I agree with you. I think at some point you have to say, seriously, y'all, this is taking way too.
Yeah, it's really not a nice, and again, it's not a nice pace for the DPAs as well. And you see the EPB guidelines struggling to find what the hell is supplementary measures. I totally understand. Like, okay, thank you, court, but what is it? So they're struggling to give some hints, but it's so difficult for them to understand.
Well, not even what are they, but what are the right ones? What are the
What are the right ones? Obviously, yeah. And we had a recent decision of the Council of States last week in Belgium, kind of saying, okay, guys, I just see that EDPB just said it kind of encryption was okay. I don't even know in which use case they were just used, but it seems to be okay. You can transfer the data to Amazon in the US. It's fine. It's encrypted. And in clear address, I don't care. It's fine. Go. So you see, it's still a lot to learn from the judges as well. But it's normal, right? It's a process. So we cannot expect, it's not because we go to court that we will have, you know, a real enforcement of the claims too. Yeah. So it's just another way. I'm not sure it's going to work immediately. It's we have to wait for that for sure.
And we are still waiting to find out what the actual right supplementary measures are. This is about half a year ago, and we have not been able to solve that yet. And I think that will take a long time.
It will, especially when you consider what we just talked about, the episode that went live this week about the decision out of the German court, which is an interim decision by a local court, still might go to trial, might not go to trial, but it was an interesting decision.
Yeah, you mean the cookie decision where the court said you cannot transfer cookie data to the United States because that is very dangerous.
For any reason, under any protections, basically.
Yeah. So basically the opposite of what the Belgian court said and say, oh, if it's encrypted, go ahead. So this sooner or later, this will end up before the Court of Justice of the European Union again, maybe to help clarify what exactly those supplementary measures should be, when they should be in place, how they should be in place.
Yep.
But in the interim, I think that you also see that a lot of companies are trying to find out how to deal with all this stuff, and that a lot of them are actually trying to make an effort. No, not every one of them. But also, when we speak to our customers, you hear that a lot of them want to take this seriously. They just have no idea where to start.
Yeah, they want to get it right. It's just we don't know what right is.
No. So it will be trial and error. But it's always, I think, better to have something in place than have nothing in place. And that's also what the recent enforcement cases have shown us, that most of those cases were against companies that did not have SECs or did not have updated SECs or had not done a transfer risk assessment or had not implemented the supplementary safeguards.
Right. And frankly, what it comes down to as well is not only having these basic elements in place, but it's also having a risk assessment. Have you documented that, hey, I have a cookie program. These are the steps I've taken. I think we've mitigated the risks.
So yeah, back to square one, documenting everything step by step. And
Document.
Yeah, that's basically also what I tell my students when I talk about accountability. Document every step of the way, because documenting it will also help you to review it later on, and you will need to review it on a regular basis, probably annually, to find out whether you still are compliant. So documentation is absolutely key when it comes to not just your data transfers, to anything you do where you need to be accountable, whether that is your taxes, your environmental policies, or your data policies. It all needs to be properly documented.
Yes. Consistency breeds compliance, and compliance breeds.
Wow, there we go. So now we are on the topic of cookies, or at least some cookies.
We should have done this a week ago. I think it was National Cookie Day, and I couldn't find a cookie.
Well, luckily we do not have a National Cookie Day here in the Netherlands, but I guess you have a national day for everything. Was this a presidential proclamation as well, or was this just something that somebody in marketing designed? Yeah.
Exactly. Some marketing design, so we all go out and buy cookies. And I have to tell you, the gluten-free double-stuffed Oreos are pretty darn good.
Very good.
But I didn't have one.
Well, we are talking about cookies, but we're talking about those other ones, the dark ones. Well, Oreos are pretty dark as well, but...
The dark ones.
The dark patterns. And you actually, we recorded two podcasts this year with you and your fellow participants in ACC panels. One of those was about tracking and dark patterns and cookies, and we never followed up. How did those conference panels go?
Oh, the panels went very well. There was a lot of information shared. There was a lot of questions that came up afterwards. The cookie one in particular had a ton of questions. I guess both of them did. But it was really interesting because on the cookie one, we had people on both sides of the ocean and addressing different ways they do things. And so it was really fascinating.
Interesting. So with Jocelyn Pauly and Lindsay Schultz, we also spoke about dark patterns and tracking.
Yes. You're nudging people to move. And yes, I'm doing waving hands. Nobody can see that. You're nudging people to make one selection over the other because you're influencing them by giving them a bright green button and then a little bitty button that nobody even knows is a button. And those are the things that starting to do.
So it's a more sophisticated version of a pre-ticked box.
Exactly.
Moved away from a pre-ticked box, but let's do a big green one and a little tiny gray one that no one's going to really notice on their mobile device.
That you don't even see because it's the same color as the text.
I'm not really sure. How did people suddenly agree that these things were called dark patterns? I mean, I got very used to sort of UDAP thinking, right? Like, make sure it's not unfair, deceptive, or, you know, but like all of a sudden we're calling it all dark patterns. Like, does anyone know how we started to...
And doesn't a dark pattern sound really sophisticated?
I know.
I think it was a book as well.
Yeah, and it sounds like creepy Netflix series or something, like dark patterns.
I'm still bummed.
I think it makes you think of the dark web, and you associate dark web with criminal activity and hacking and all of that kind of activism.
Right?
So I think that's why it sounds particularly sophisticated and dark. Yeah.
I'm still bumfuzzled over the dark patterns. Not the dark patterns themselves. Why do we call them dark patterns? I have a feeling Jeff would have an answer for that.
Well, I think in any case, they are misleading and they are trying to, it's companies trying to hide things from you. So they are shielding in the dark. They are working in the dark. It's something naughty going on that can see the light of day.
I like that. We're going to start calling them naughty cookies.
Well, you know, it's the season to be jolly, but and making lists of who are naughty and who are nice, so...
Right?
I can think of a lot of companies that can drop into my naughty list quite quickly when it comes to cookies.
Yep.
But yes, it's still a big issue, and I'm not sure whether we will actually see it disappear with the updates of cookie and tracking technology.
I don't think so either.
The enforcement from data protection authorities will help. Earlier this week, French DPA, the CNIL, announced that they have issued another 30 notices to companies across Europe for non-compliant cookie banners. A lot of the NOIP cases are still ongoing, and of the scanning that is done by NOIP, also that we talked about a lot in the episode with Romain.
Yep.
So you will appreciate that enforcement on cookie banners, and especially on non-compliant cookie banners, in all forms and shapes, will continue.
Yes. What's up next?
So let's take a look at two of the major developments that we saw this year and things that got everybody working, so everybody excited, everybody angry, everybody scared.
Now I'm guessing.
For what could follow next. But we had, first of all, PIPL, and second of all, the new standard contractual clauses.
PIPL.
Are you still being inconsistent in using PIPL?
I am being very consistent in PIPL.
Oh, so now it's also IJPAA?
No, but it's neither is it GDPR. This will be an ongoing battle, I'm just saying.
There is a lot in the law that is dependent on guidance coming out from the government entity. And as we know, guidance doesn't tend to come out quickly. And we love the fact that they're stepping up and they're providing the law. And a lot of provisions in here are really, really good. I'm sorry for the companies that have to comply with them, but they're really, really good data protection provisions. I love that China is stepping it up this way And it looks like there's going to be a battle between China and Europe of who's going to drive data protection law perhaps now. But it's interesting that so much, Paul, so much will be determined later.
Yes. Well, I mean, that was true for GDPR as well. Let's be honest. And the only advantage that we had with GDPR is that it was building on an existing privacy law where there was already some guidance available from the past. So it wasn't all that urgent. But we've seen the same in Brazil. I did a webinar yesterday. So that was on Wednesday, August 25th, on Brazil, together with one of the five directors of the Brazilian DPA. They are working very hard to get all the guidance out, but they can't do everything overnight, and it needs to go into consultation as well. They put out a consultation on the concept of controller processor and had 3,000 responses.
And I'm curious to see how many responses the Chinese CAC has by now on their draft guidelines on international transfers.
Right. But I'm not holding my breath for anything reasonable coming out.
Well, I mean, we did get that one point a little wrong. There was very quick guidance on the international transfers, at least when it comes to the security assessment, much quicker than either of us would ever had expected.
Yeah, but draft guidance is not adopted yet.
It's true. It's true. But it hints at what companies should get prepared for.
Yes.
But it's only for the one topic. And for the rest, we are still mainly acting in the dark on what it is that we should do for China, who the points of contact are going to be, how international companies should deal with all of this, whether or not you would need explicit consent for every element of data going out of China, and how to do that.
Yeah.
It's PIPL is still a mess. PIPL is still a mess.
Yeah.
And I think it will remain like that for a while. At the same time, we'll have to continue to deal with it. And I can very well imagine the struggle of lots of companies and also lots of companies pulling out of China.
Yeah.
To get it done. And I mean, even we have received a lot of questions on how we are going to support our products in China.
That's all I can seem to say right now is,
You don't want to elaborate on this?
Well, part of it, it's interesting because there isn't a lot of guidance on a lot of parts of it. I mean, some of the pieces that early on were a little fuzzy due to translation or cultural interpretation, what it is, like under sensitive data, the specific identity or the specially designated status, we did find out from people, and no one has said no yet, but we did find out from people in the know that it means essentially someone that's like an undercover cop or especially protected identity that should that become known would threaten that person's life. So we did find that out. If anybody actually knows anything more that's incorrect, please let us know. But it's interesting that it's these little gems that we're searching for to more color to what the law is to clarify what it is you're protecting is something that we're still looking for. And I don't know that these will ever be truly clarified at all, but some of them they're still.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that we start to understand by now is what the difference is between a large or an important player in the Chinese market and the average company. We've seen in the transfer guidance that as soon as you process the personal data of a million people, then you fall into the large category. Also, if you transfer the personal data of 100,000 people or of 10,000 people, if it's sensitive personal data. So those are very clear thresholds. And I would actually
If
they are adopted, of course. But those are very clear thresholds. And I would actually like to see similar numbers also for Europe to understand what is a large-scale data processing.
Yeah, what's large volume, exactly, which we've, you know, for years been just kind of playing with what does large mean to you kind of thing. But yes, with China, that would be very nice. We'd love to have clarification if you do the cybersecurity assessment or you have the standard contractual clauses or you're under an international treaty for cross-border transfer, does that mean you don't need consent, specific consent from the individual? Or will you always need specific consent? The other one is whether or not access outside China into databases inside China, if that's considered a cross-border transfer. They had some earlier documented documents addressing this, but those documents have, to my knowledge, disappeared. It may be other people still have access to them, but I don't. Did they take them down from public consumption because they're going to go a different direction now? We don't know.
Nope, we don't. And well, to me, this clarified one thing. It helped me understand how a large part of the world must have felt when GDPR went into effect. For us here in Europe, especially all the European privacy and data protection lawyers, GDPR was just an evolution of what we were already dealing with. We knew the context, we knew the basic legal framework. So for us, it all made sense. And we could also see easily how GDPR would interrelate with all these other pieces of law.
Which, so now you're saying you feel our pain?
Yeah, I think I'm saying that. I think I'm saying that. And that might even be more true, actually, when the Indian law will come into effect in 2 years. It was tabled in the winter session of the Indian Congress today.
Surprise!
December 16. So it might still be adopted this year. It may also not. But the report from the committee that prepared the legislation is only some 534 pages long. So that's nice reading under the Christmas tree, I guess, if you do business in India. We'll see what will happen there. In any case, the Indian law to date foresees a 2-year transition period. So I would be surprised if that is struck out. The other major thing, we are talking international transfers, is obviously the new standard contractual clauses and everything that came with it. I think we don't need to go into the detail of discussing the supplementary safeguards again, but let's listen a bit back on what we thought about the SCCs. They are more flexible because there are now 4 modules. It is one set of standard contractual clauses, and you can more or less pick and choose from the whole set. And there are controller-to-controller and controller-to-processor clauses.
Doesn't that make it easier for people to mess up? Because it's my understanding, and I've read them as well, but it's my understanding, it's not like there are 4 sets of standard contractual clauses. There's one set, and it bits and pieces through it. You can pick and choose the part that you want to insert.
That is correct. But it is pretty clearly indicated what goes where. So as long as you pay attention, then you should be fine. And to be honest, I also think that somebody very soon will just create the 4 different documents.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not like you want to print them the way they are now and check the one that you want. You actually want to create the version that works for you and label it.
Well, surprise, surprise, TrustArk did exactly that, and those documents are still available on our International Transfers microsite that you'll find at TrustArk.com. But we may need to revisit this SEC discussion in the new year when we actually will go from 4 to 5 modules.
That will be interesting indeed. I'm eager to see what that last one is going to be, if it's going to be a module, if it's going to layer into the others. I'm eager to see it.
What are your predictions there?
I believe it's going to be something like additional safeguards that it's going to append to the other modules and say this.
I think it's actually going to be a 5th module because there are fewer obligations for companies that are fully subject to GDPR by virtue of Article 3.2 for specific processing operations. So it would only need to supplement certain elements of the GDPR to deal with conflicts of law situations, to deal with the supplementary safeguards.
So you're saying it's going to be Module 5, GDPR subject processing companies.
Outside of the European Union.
Outside the European Union. Okay. Bet on.
So what other bets do you have in store for next year?
Bets for me? Ha 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 ha.
Well, or for the data protection community.
U.S. federal privacy law.
Really? Will it happen, finally?
I don't know.
In an election year?
Oh, probably not in that case. But it's a minor election year, not a major election year. That's a little bit of a difference. And also, I really, really, really want a replacement for Privacy Shield. I really, really, really want it.
And when do you want it?
Now.
Well, I think...
Under my Christmas tree.
I think the Christmas tree deadline has passed, yeah.
Do you think 2022 we're going to find something for Privacy Shield? Do y'all hear me whining and complaining here?
I hear you, but
I really want something.
I'm not sure. Well, I think we will get something in the course of next year. I don't believe it will be for Q1. So that means that we can easily be close to another year before something is operational.
Which is so painful. It really is painful. But it does mean that by the time people put it in place, companies will have already transitioned over to using standard contractual clauses, and then trying to get the controllers to let go of having standard contractual clauses in lieu of this new Privacy Shield replacement, that's going to be a controversy all on its own.
That's true. Although the SCCs could still serve as a backup, and the Privacy Shield 2.0 or Privacy Guardian or whatever we're going to call it might be...
Vision.
Yeah, it might be easier to use, but then with the backup in place, in just in case something goes wrong again and somebody would go to court to challenge it, which of course will happen.
It's almost as if someone prayed to the privacy gods that privacy people needed job security.
Well, that they managed.
Okay, next.
Well, no more predictions.
No more predictions. That's enough. That's enough. Well, I do predict there's going to be more states passing privacy laws.
Okay.
But I don't know how many. Maybe 4 or 5. I'm going to lower my prediction to hockey score level.
A few states, no federal privacy law, and hopefully a Privacy Shield replacement.
That's enough, right?
Your predictions are pretty much US-centered. Typical American.
Yeah, I pretty am. Hey, wait a minute. You have a European for Privacy Shield replacement.
This is in the best interest of Americans.
Well, of course it's in the best interest of America.
America first.
I mean, well, I don't know. A lot of people would probably disagree that a federal privacy law for the U.S. is in our best interest. But I do say, but, you know, I'm just lackadaisical here.
Well, I think for the next year... Let's go out on a limb. I will say we get an agreement on the e-privacy regulation next year.
Ooh, you think we're going to see an e-privacy regulation?
I think we will get an agreement on e-privacy. That's taken a long time, but I think we'll get it.
Okay.
And I'm hopeful that more non-European states will sign on to Convention 108 Plus, the Council of Europe.
Oh, that would be nice.
So that they will actually... see the advantage of a global binding agreement on data protection.
And do you really think that's going to happen?
I really think that's going to happen. And
do you really think the US is going to sign
no.
up to it? Okay.
No, I'm not. I don't think that the US will sign. I do think that Canada in time will join, maybe not next year, but maybe in 2 or 3.
I think so. You may be right there. I'd be looking at some Latin America countries.
Brazil will certainly join. I think Japan may try to join. So those are on my list for joining Convention 108 Plus.
Okay.
And I think we will finally have a physical global privacy assembly again.
Ooh, that would be nice.
It would be.
I was going to say, I actually think the UK will roll out their standard contractual clauses.
Well, that's a certainty, I guess. That's a given.
Things could happen where they don't.
Will the UK declare the US adequate next year?
Ooh, let's not go there.
It's also in your interest. If you want a privacy shield, then maybe you also want UK adequacy.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to be good or bad for the UK.
Depends on how they do it.
Yeah.
So any
okay.
any predictions for the remainder of the year?
Christmas is coming. Arizona's not going to get a blizzard down here where I live. Paul's going to get a new home.
We'll see. Could be. I have one prediction, actually, of what might still happen before the end of the year. And for let's listen to a clip from your favorite episode with Dr. Eric Cole.
Probably not the clip I would have chosen. As long as you're dealing with a reputable...
A reputable criminal. I mean,
if you're not dealing with a reputable criminal, then...
An ethical criminal.
An ethical criminal. I mean, that's the thing. You got to make sure that you're dealing with an ethical one. And how do you do your background search on your criminal when you're contacted? How do you know they're not just using another ethical criminal name? And I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth and I actually mean them. How do you know that the ones you're dealing with are ethical, or are they using
an ethical one's name if they're not ethical?
It comes down.
It's a circle there.
It comes down to do your market research.
Okay.
But before you go in and go to a restaurant, most people are going to see, are other people at the restaurant? Are other people going there? If a restaurant closes down because of food poisoning, you're probably not going to go there. So it's you do your market research. And for example, DarkSide is a very well-known, and once again, in the bizarreness of this conversation, an ethical criminal group that they are known for recovering their data. DarkSide has even been known that if you can't recover your data, they'll give you your money back. So,
well, and here's the thing. I guess if someone was to appropriate their name and use it incorrectly, they would probably go after the ones using their name inappropriately. And so I guess there would be repercussions. So I don't know if you know any of these ethical criminals or not, or if any of them actually listen to us. But if you do, please come on the show. I have a ton of questions to ask you.
We'll keep you anonymous. That's fine. Yeah,
we won't even take pictures of you on the recording. I mean, and I don't publish them anyway because I'm lazy. Okay, I chose this episode strictly for the fact that we laughed our way all the way through it. From the beginning to the end, we laughed, and I'm still laughing listening to it.
At the same time, we laughed about some very serious topics, including cybersecurity. And yes, of course, this part was more for fun because it was such a bizarre conversation on ethical hackers being trusted when they come into your network. At the same time, I fear that this is going to be something that a lot of companies may be facing over the Christmas holidays.
Yeah, could be. We're starting to see a lot of scams come out, Christmas scams. I mean, even my new hire got a text message purportedly from our CEO saying, you know, essentially, welcome. Glad to see you. Are you getting onboarded good? Blah, blah, blah. Just want to say hello. And then five or six messages down. Yeah, I need your help with some gift cards. And she was like, yeah, no.
This was, what, 6 hours into the job?
Yeah, right. And apparently they're scraping it from your email signature because a lot of people have their cell phone in their email signature. And so companies are starting to scrape that. But literally her first day on the job.
Might actually be a best practice for a lot of organizations to see how vulnerable their new hires are and how...
Well, that was one thing Chris said, is maybe this is Park's way of welcoming new people to TrustArc to see how savvy they are.
Yeah.
But yeah, but you do see a lot of scams around the holiday time, particularly the one that I really, really despise is where a company will call you and say, we noted some unusual activity in your meow, meow, meow account. And just so you know, we're legitimate. We're going to send you a code. Give that code to us. And essentially what they're doing is they're trying to log into their account using multi-factor authentication, knowing that it's going to send a code to the person. But if people don't know this is coming, they think the company, oh, they have my phone number already. They're already going to send me a code. They know who I am, kind of thing. And they fall for it.
Yep.
It's really horrible. But Eric Cole was fantastic on that episode. His book is really good. Very, very practical information. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, so did I. And I think from the cyber perspective, a lot of companies also need to be careful now with the Log4Shell crisis. Can we call it a crisis? Yeah, we can call it a crisis.
We can call it a crisis. We can call it anything we want.
Of course. But I mean, Log4Shell, the data problem in Apache software that is used for logging by lots of organizations, by lots of software that has not been fully patched, I believe, that will take some more time even to roll out into all the other software updates, makes a lot of organizations around the world vulnerable and cyber criminals.
Oh, absolutely. We have verified that we don't have it.
Yeah, we don't have it, but cyber criminals will use the Christmas period to find attacks, to find weak spots and to attack certain networks. So
absolutely.
Cybersecurity professionals may be in for a rough couple of weeks until the end of the year.
No time off for them.
Absolutely not.
Those bad guys don't take time off.
We'll wrap up this episode with one final clip from one of our favorite guests, Emerald DeLeo. Also, one of the episodes most listened to this year. And when I listened to this episode again today, I noticed that actually she slipped in there a nice recommendation for me on how to get started in my new job.
There's so much happening. and you could say everything is a priority. And I think if you look at the history of the word priority, I think it was never intended to be plural. I think the etymology of the word priority was supposed to be singular. And I think we all started saying, you know, these are our priorities. And I think that's probably practical. But I don't think you can have, you know, 20. That's too many. I think you need to break it down. And at least this is how I did it. I kind of did a bit happening in the world, sort of analysis. And then I basically, like, what is happening in the company analysis. And then I figured, okay, I need a roadmap, and that roadmap needs to be reasonably flexible because things change all the time. But I think for the next 3 years, these should be the projects we work on. And those projects might shift and they might change depending on what happens in privacy. If there's another, like, Schrems 2 bomb that goes off, you know, that might change things again. But I think that's kind of how I approached it. So what's happening in the world, what's happening in the company, where do I think the risks, the big ticket items would be, the big risks, what do I think is the most important? Because like I said, Logitech is 40 years old this year, so it is a reasonably mature company, so I like wasn't walking into nothing. But at the same time, we grew, so with that, our scale of our privacy program needs to grow as well and needs to be able to adapt to that change.
Brilliant words. No surprise.
So yeah, that's me getting started next year in a new role.
How to set your priorities.
Priority. One, singular.
Your priority. And then your sub-priority.
Yeah.
And then the sub one to that one. But yeah, I'm eager for you to dive in and start actually managing privacy programs. I think it's going to be a little different world for you.
It will be. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be... Certainly, it's going to be a change not to be on the sideline anymore and just telling other people how they should work their programs, but actually do it myself. I think already said last week, I have to drink my own champagne.
Yes.
But overall, I think it will help. It will make my understanding of compliance even better. It will help the podcast because I can share new kinds of experiences and new perspectives. It will help the teaching. So overall, I'm really looking forward to this, although I'm still very sad to be leaving TrustArk, to leave all these wonderful people behind, everybody that gave me all these opportunities, that put trust in me, because yes, it's been difficult being on the other side of the world, but also for an employer to trust an employee who is completely out of their time zones, who usually would stop working when you start working. That's also pretty special.
Pretty suspicious, maybe?
Well, I mean, I still got some work done, so I guess that they paid me for a reason and they were happy with the work. But I will absolutely miss the spirit. I will miss the people working here at TrustArk.
And instead, you're going to become a demanding customer, perhaps.
Who knows? That is certainly one of the things that I would be aiming for. No confirmations, of course, yet.
Just stay away from that really bad one that's unethical. That's all we ask.
I wanna do a shout out to all of the colleagues also listening to the podcast. Thank you all for all your kind words also in the past couple of weeks after I've announced my departure. To the customers who are listening and who inquired, oh, so what are you going to do? And then question two was, will the podcast continue? That was also great to hear. So thank you all. And we look forward to be back with you in the new year around Data Protection Day.
Yes, and for the next, what's today, Thursday? So looking at Friday, Monday, for the last time they'll hear on the podcast, coworkers.
Absolutely, yeah.
Don't act so happy. Yeah, I don't feel like he's laughing at my trauma here, but...
It's very mixed feelings, you know that.
I do know.
So before we start crying on the podcast, let's thank our listeners for already two wonderful years of Serious Privacy.
Yes.
We'll be back starting season 3 in 2022. But in the meantime, if you like our series, please do tell your friends and colleagues about us. Rate and review our episodes in your favorite app or your favorite platform. And should you have any questions or suggestions, do reach out to us. The email address still is and will remain seriousprivacy@trustark.com or via Twitter at podcastprivacy. You will find, as on LinkedIn as well, just look for Serious Privacy. And you will find Kay on Twitter as Heart of Privacy, and I will say Europol B. Thank you. Thank you all. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. And see you in 2022. Goodbye.
Bye, y'all.
That was Serious Privacy.
Hey listeners, looking to navigate the realm of responsible AI data privacy governance? Well, look no further.
Absolutely. TrustArc is paving the way, offering a complete approach to managing privacy risks in the world of AI.
TrustArc allows organizations to confidently use AI with personal or sensitive data, moving forward efficiently and cost-effectively.
And here's the kicker. Protect your company and data with TrustArc's privacy-driven compliance software.
Because their deep automation streamlines data privacy governance, cutting your time to compliance with automated data mapping, risk assessments, and regulatory reporting.
TrustArc's enhancements go way beyond that, helping organizations understand AI better and align cross-functionally on data governance, privacy, and security.
Plus, they provide guidance on privacy governance for AI and how to mitigate risks using frameworks like NIST AI, OECD AI, and the NIMACY Privacy Management Accountability Framework.
If you're aiming for compliance excellence, check out Privacy Central, seriously one of my best parts. It uses automation and privacy expertise to understand your requirements, build and manage your privacy program with ease.
Oh, I agree. Privacy Central is your go-to to measure your progress toward responsible AI data compliance.
Stay ahead with TrustArc's Privacy Central. Visit TrustArc.com now. Ask me and Paul if you have any questions.